Piper debuts its new LSA at Sebring. Fees for checked bags are on the rise. And Air France KLM adds a surcharge for obese passengers. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, January 22, 2010. The company which introduced the original light-sport aircraft in 1937 is finally back in the game. At Sebring yesterday, Piper introduced the Piper Sport, based on the Sport Cruiser and manufactured under license with Czech Sport Aircraft. Deliveries are set to start in April. The plane will be competitive with current higher-end LSAs, with three models ranging from about $120,000 to $140,000 U.S. All will come with leather seating, Rotax 912 power, and performance specs which push the upper limits set by the FAA for light sport aircraft. Ironically, Piper re-enters the segment it invented with 100 competitors already on the market. With useful load and range of 600 pounds and 600 nautical miles, the Piper Sport has significant advantages in both over the heavier Continental-powered Cessna Skycatcher. The Skycatcher, of course, has the advantage of a 1,000-order head start. The Sport Cruiser, on which the Piper Sport is based, has been around for almost 4 years, and while the plane has received high marks, Czech Sport Aircraft has never quite got the hang of doing business in the U.S. Piper CEO Kevin Gould points out that Piper's brand and extensive sales and service network should resolve that immediately. Acknowledging the company's early heritage in the segment, he told Aero TV, quote, "This is the current-day incarnation of the Cub," unquote. There are no doubt some folks in Yakima and Sulphur Springs who'd love to have that argument. We've got this story covered every which way. Read more about the Piper Sport in text form, dated January 21st, at aero-news.net. See our interview with Kevin Gould and some nice air-to-air footage in yesterday's feature on aero-tv.net. And ANN's Jim Campbell will join us in today's Aero News special feature. He's in Sebring, flew the chase plane for the Aero TV feature, and will offer his comments. American Airlines recently announced it'll join the other legacy carriers in raising the fees for checked bags. Beginning with tickets purchased for travel February 1st, American will be charging $25 for the first bag and $35 for the second, matching fees charged by Delta, United, Continental, and U.S. Airways. CNN reports that the other carriers offer a slight discount when you pay for checked bags when you check in online. But so far, American will not. DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics reports that in just the third quarter of 2009, airlines reported collecting $740 million in baggage fees. Air France KLM is ready to start charging passengers too obese to fit in a single airline seat, a 75% surcharge for a second adjacent seat. Passengers who don't fit in a single seat will need to straddle two seats and use a belt across both. AFP reports the fee affects bookings made starting February 1st for travel starting April 1st. Spokeswoman Monique Motsi explains it's a safety issue. Quote, "We have to make sure that the backrest can move freely up and down and that all passengers are securely fastened with a safety belt," unquote. Up next on ANN, the Pilots Union comes out against security theater. A temporary control tower is on its way to Port-au-Prince. And the FAA is still fighting the idea of UAVs in the national airspace system. You are listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. If you're looking for people at the most risk to fall victim to a terrorist attack on a U.S. airliner, the pilots of those airliners would have to be near the top of that list. Now, the Airline Pilots Association is calling for a shift away from TSA's security theater and for more focus on the people who mean us harm. In a white paper titled "Meeting Today's Aviation Security Needs, A Call to Action for a Trust-Based Security System," ALPA calls for identifying the trustworthiness of each passenger through a combination of publicly available information, human interaction, and behavior pattern recognition. Union President Captain John Prater echoes the concerns of analysts who note that attempts to detect specific weapons will always be one step behind what terrorists will do tomorrow. Quote, "We've learned that if there's a will, there's often a way to do harm. Yet we still screen everyone essentially the same way and spend most of our security resources looking for objects, not indications of hostile intent. Identifying trustworthy individuals is critical so that more time and scrutiny can be given to those passengers about whom little is known and to those who may intend to do us harm," unquote. Captain Rob Powers, ALPA's National Security Committee chairman, puts it this way, quote, "The objects that can be used to cause harm are constantly changing, but the intent to do harm remains constant. A trust-based approach will, most importantly, create an even more secure air transportation system, but it will also limit privacy intrusions, leverage existing resources, and make screening more efficient," unquote. In a world where we're still screening airline pilots for prohibited items, despite the fact that moments later they'll be at the controls of the planes, it's kind of hard to know whether the voice of common sense can even find an audience in Washington, D.C. The FAA says it has dispatched a portable, temporary control tower to Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and chartered a large cargo aircraft to get it there. It's described as 44 feet long, 13 feet high, and it weighs in at 25,000 pounds. FAA technicians are expected to have it up and running within 48 hours of its arrival. Controllers providing terminal air traffic control services have been working outside at a folding table, using military radios to handle about 160 flights a day. The airport's permanent control tower was rendered unusable by the earthquake. The FAA has issued a certificate of authorization for the FH-500 UAV, which is operated and built by Flint Hills Solutions of Augusta, Kansas. The certificate allows for safe operations at Crisis City, an emergency response training area in the national airspace located in Kansas. Flint Hills Solutions uses Airstar International's GAS RC helicopters as the platform for its own autonomous navigation technology. In addition to integrating an autopilot, fully stabilized gimbal cameras and video transmitters are also integrated, allowing for remote live video feeds to emergency responders. The ability to fly the FH-500 UAV over Crisis City allows it to be integrated into training conducted there for search and rescue operations. The receipt of the certificate for Crisis City has wider implications. Flint Hills says it opens the door to expedited issuance of emergency certificates for operations over natural disaster sites in the U.S., for example, within hours of a tornado. Businesses near Dayton, Ohio, see an opportunity to be players in the UAV revolution. The U.S. Air Force is likely to acquire an increasing number of unmanned systems in the future that would be managed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The Dayton Daily News reports that the Dayton Development Coalition, along with the Air Force Research Laboratory, have been in discussions with the FAA to allow simultaneous use of the national airspace. But there are also lots of civilian flights in Ohio's airspace, and the FAA is so far holding firm on keeping UAV traffic from mixing with the see-and-avoid world. But proponents say sense-and-avoid technology has progressed to the point where the FAA's concerns could be addressed, and the folks in Ohio want those jobs pretty badly. Still ahead, Eurocopter reports strong 2009 numbers. A small Michigan company will develop fuel injection for JP8. And here's important news for tourists in Death Valley. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, January 22nd. I'm Paul Platt. Attendees at Heli Expo last year remarked at how the helicopter market seems to be handling the recession better than the fixed-wing sectors. Year-end 2009 figures from Eurocopter provide more evidence. The company says that a decline in civilian orders was offset by increased military business, allowing it to meet its 2009 sales and delivery targets. Eurocopter says sales were the second highest of any year in its history. Deliveries totaled 558 for the year, down from 588 in 2008. New orders fell in half, from 715 in 08 to 344 in 09. But the company says the total value of orders stayed about the same, because the military helicopters are valued much higher on average than civilian models. The U.S. Army now uses JP-8 fuel in everything from aircraft to trucks to generators, but not all commercial diesel engines have fuel injection systems that play well with that fuel. To remedy that, the Department of Defense has made a Phase 1 award under its Small Business Innovation Research Program to Alternative Fuel Technology LLC of Redford, Michigan, for the development of ultra-high-pressure JP-8 fuel injection systems. The goal is a common rail system that can deliver pressures up to 40,000 PSI, using injectors which can be readily adapted to the engines used by the Army. AFT says it was chosen because of its previous work in the field. SBIR contracts are limited to small, for-profit businesses that employ fewer than 500 people. Finally, here's one of those stories that brings to my mind some really silly questions. The FAA, with the National Park Service, is working to develop an air tour management plan for Death Valley National Park. Congress has mandated that all the national parks have SOP in place to make sure air tours don't disrupt the sensitive ecology or visitor experiences, and they're looking for comments between now and February 18th. Okay, you asked for it. Will my insurance rates go up if my agent finds out I filed from Badwater to Furnace Creek via Death Valley? If I put minus 282 feet ground elevation and plus 134 degrees Fahrenheit into my density altitude calculator, will my computer suffer a hernia? Oops, never mind, I tried it and got a DA of 4,358 feet MSL equivalent. Now, how exactly will that affect my required takeoff distance if the tires are on fire? That's the latest from Aero News. I know, but it's Friday. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Jim Campbell reports in from Sebring on yesterday's opening of the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo, including some observations on Piper's announcement of its new LSA. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.